This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The long-awaited medical marijuana program approved by the Ohio legislature 2 years ago was supposed to be operational late last week. On multiple fronts, the deadlines set in the legislation have been missed and pushed back. Besides delays in licensing growers, allowing them to begin cultivating marijuana plants, the creation of a registry of medical marijuana patients and caregivers is late. So what are the moving pieces, and when might they come together so that patients can seek alternative forms of relief? To explore those questions, we are joined today by the medical director of Ohio Marijuana Card, Dr. Timothy Thress. His organization helps potential patients qualify for the marijuana card that will allow them to purchase marijuana products. Cincinnati Enquirer health reporter Ann Saker, the executive director of the Ohio Medical Marijuana License Holder Coalition, and assistant director of Rozelle Consulting Solutions, Alex Thomas, and Cincinnati Enquirer development reporter Randy Tucker. To join our discussions, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everyone, to Cincinnati Edition. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you.
This is a whole area that has come up frequently in the last few months. People are very interested in where we stand and where we're going and all of those sorts of things. So, Randy Tucker from the Enquirer, given the fact that other states have set up medical marijuana systems, some like in Maine and Philadelphia. In Maine, it took them a year. In Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, it took about 18 months. Why have things gone so slowly in Ohio?
Well, a lot of things I think are just out of control, out of the control of state regulators. So the state says that the infrastructure for regulating the medical marijuana program is in place, and it is from a regulatory standpoint. But only a small percentage of the more than two dozen cultivators, you know, licensed to grow the product in the state have received operational certificates. And a lot of that is because of the growers themselves haven't they've experienced construction delays. They haven't gotten the local certifications that they need before the state can step in and give them a certificate to operate. So, you know, some things are indeed out of the state's control, and that's why we have these delays. And I think, you know, they're the same delays that you've seen in most other states that have tried to set up these programs. And I would say that Ohio probably, you know, if we have medical marijuana available by the end of the year, our delay wouldn't be as significant as it has been in some other states.
Okay, so there have been some other states that have also found that despite what they expected, they had to keep pushing it back. Ann Saker, have there been states that have gotten into trouble rushing to the market, and then once they got things up and going, had to backtrack and take care of some problems?
I don't know of any specific instance of a state that's had a problem rushing too quickly to market. I think the political and governmental structures of the states have been traditionally for decades opposed to marijuana. We have a huge law enforcement infrastructure set up to combat marijuana. So I think a lot of this has been a hurdle of cultural and psychological barriers, as well as the regulatory and governmental hurdles that have come up only recently. So a lot of this has been a push and pull just to get to this point.
So there's a lot of you have to get a cultural change and an attitudinal change.
I think that's one of the remarkable things about the whole marijuana story in this country and in Ohio is the rapid shift of opinion in how we approach marijuana. And there are lots of reasons for that. Some of it is the baby boomers are getting older and they're accustomed and comfortable with marijuana, and now they're getting to a point where they want to have it as part of their medical plan. We also have millennials who have no fear of marijuana. And they want to see it available, and they don't want to have to face a jail term for possessing it. Mm-hmm. So there's lots going on here.
Well, last week we talked to Jeremy Unruh, who's the director of public and regulatory affairs for Pharmacon, a large vertically integrated medical marijuana company. He talked about some of the human cost of the delays in Ohio. Let's listen to what he has to say before we move on here.
And it's shameful that we have turned these families who are already suffering with the condition of their children into refugees, moving somewhere, uprooting their family just so they can get the medication that their perhaps children need in order to function. And I don't mean function well. I mean just the bare act of living. So we want to get up and running as fast as possible, but we also don't want to make mistakes by being too hasty. Those are lessons that we've learned from Illinois and New York, other states where there is a 6 month or a 9 month operational deadline, meaning you have to be operational within a certain time period of being awarded your license. Well, when you're rushed down an artificial timeline like that, you make mistakes.
Alex Thomas, you're with the Ohio Medical Marijuana License Holder Coalition. When you hear a quote like that, that on the one hand focuses on the human costs on the front end, on the back end says, but we do have to be cautious. What's your reaction to that?
I think it is important to note a couple things that Jeremy had to say there. On the one hand, you know, we understand that patients and patient advocates are justifiably upset that September 8th has now come and gone without them having the ability to purchase medical marijuana in the state. I mean, you've all seen the numerous stories and cases where this product has been able to restore the ability to function and peace of mind to families and patients all around the country. But I think what Jeremy said there at the end is very important to keep in mind throughout this process, that while we want to give patients their relief as soon as we possibly can, we need to get this right. And we've had the fortune to be able to look at other states' experiences as we've set this program up in Ohio, as the legislation was moving through the process a couple of years ago. You know, best practices were sought out, and the Departments of Commerce and the Pharmacy Board continue to rely on those best practices that they've seen, and frankly, worst practices, if you will, experienced by some other states. So, you know, we're trying to find a balance here, I think, as a state and as a program, between the need to get patients their relief as soon as possible and, again, getting it right, having a safe, secure, reliable program that will benefit patients more in the long run than being hasty and rushing something out.
Your organization, the Ohio Medical Marijuana License Holder Coalition, who's in that? Who? What licenses are we talking about? I mean, in the whole supply chain that, you know, the growers, the producers, the dispensaries, who's part of your organization?
Yeah, so going back, beginning of this calendar year, a number of cultivator license holders, which at the time were the only part of the supply chain that had been licensed, came to us and said, look, there are a number of advocacy groups around the state that represent, if you will, different facets of this industry or of this ecosystem. But there's not a group that represents solely the businesses that are licensed to produce the product in the state of Ohio. So we formed our coalition, and it is made up, again, solely of those businesses that have the licenses to grow, process, and dispense.
So all three of those categories, people who have to be licensed as part of this, are all part of your group. There's not, you're not just representing growers or just representing processors or dispensaries.
Correct. So we're in the process of bringing on, as processors and dispensaries have just been licensed in the last number of weeks here,
right,
bringing them into our group as well.
Dr. Thrace, one of the goals that, as I understand it, that has not been met is the creation of a statewide registry of both potential patients and caregivers trained to prescribe marijuana-based substances. Where does that registry stand at this point?
Well, you'll have to ask the Board of Pharmacy. They're the ones that are in charge of making that up. What we do is what I've been doing is seeing patients for the last 3 months and issuing a temporary card. And once that board of pharmacy is up and running, what I understand is after they start the registry, dispensaries are supposed to open within 60 days. So I think they're waiting to see how far the dispensaries are. And, you know, and like I said, you'll have to ask them, you know, when they decide to make this registry, we're going to submit all the information and then they'll be able to, send out permanent cards. But in the meantime, we have temporary cards.
But temporary cards. Can those temporary cards be used in any way at this point, or are you just sort of lining people up?
Well, they're a legal defense. They're kind of a legal defense saying that they're under my care, and people can't – actually, they can have marijuana on themselves with this temporary card and be using it for medicinal purposes. The problem is, how do they get the marijuana? We're assuming that they're getting it illegally. A lot of people know people from other states. A lot of people, you know, get it through the mail or a friend or whatever. But some people are, I'd say the majority of people I see on a daily basis are using marijuana right now, and they know it works for them, or else they wouldn't come in and plunk down $280. So they're confident. But then there's also the people that are, they are very rule oriented and they do not want to break the law. They want to do everything possible. They know they understand that their diagnosis or condition would be benefited from the marijuana. And they're the ones that, like I've heard, is they're suffering there. And there's a lot of suffering going on. And, as physicians, I've changed a lot of what I thought 3 months ago. I mean, it's amazing how many people are actually being helped by this this drug, I tell patients, I said, well, maybe at the end of this year, you know, I have to change my oratory every time because I'm not sure when the Board of Pharmacy is going to be, you know, doing their thing. And I know they started planning about a month ago, so it takes 2.5 months to get a plant to flower, and then they have to go through some other things. But my job is to give talk about, you know, medical marijuana as a drug. It's to give them quality marijuana so they can dose it and repeat the dose needed to get them healthy.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to do.
Ann, do you have a...
Yes, I had a question, Dr. Thresh. You may recall that you and I spoke a couple months ago when we did the stories about doctors who were coming into the system. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you've learned just in the 3 months that you've been treating patients in this way. I mean, what have you learned that you didn't know in your 30-plus years of medicine that you've learned in the last 3 months?
There's a lot. I mean, I've learned a lot about chronic diseases and a lot of the things that... it seems like a lot of patients go through, they'll see a physician, they'll finally get a diagnosis, then they'll be told that, you know, maybe the medicine that they're going to be treated with has horrible side effects, and they don't really have a cure for it, and they try it, they try different techniques, they try drugs, they try narcotics, they try Lyrica, gabapentin, you name it, and they hate it, they want to try something different, then they go out to, you know, some friend gives them some marijuana and it's the best they felt in 20 years or so. I mean, there's a lot of suffering out there. And I think that marijuana, medical marijuana it's not the, you know, like the end all of all drugs, but it really has, it has changed my mind as far as you know, a lot of people are just being, you know, told we got nothing for you. You know, we're talking about fibromyalgia. We're talking about chronic pain, a lot of seizure patients, a lot of GI patients. They're all being treated with a lot of expensive drugs that really don't really give them relief. And so that's why they're coming to us. And it's been kind of, it's been a really enlightening to see all the people that I think we'll be able to help, and I'm hoping that we can get this thing up and running in the next few months.
Last week we spoke with somebody, and you'll hear that his name is Corey as we start this clip that I think comes out of. It's a perfect time to use it coming out of what Dr. Thress was just talking about. So let's listen to Corey's question.
My name is Corey. I have some chronic pain in all my joints. It's arthritis, but it's also associated with the pounding I took playing football in high school and college 40-plus years ago. And for this pain, I've been taking a prescription NSAID that I'm certain is going to cause damage to my kidneys. I don't want to take opioids because they're addictive. And I have heard that medical marijuana is effective in treating chronic pain like arthritis. I don't have any idea what the price will be, but it will probably be a lot higher than my current out-of-pocket for prescriptions I get now. Let's say if it's three times what I'm currently spending for the NSAID I take now, if it's more than that much, there is a ceiling over that to what I'd be willing to spend.
Dr. Thress, there's a couple of questions embedded there. One is, this Corey is particularly interested in the question of marijuana being a safer alternative on the question of chronic pain that he's experiencing than some of the prescription drugs he's taking. But secondly, the question of cost here. What's your view about the medical question here? And then we might toss it to somebody else about the cost question.
Well, as far as chronic pain, marijuana in low doses, and what we're trying to promote is start low and go up a little higher. And as far as the side effects and addictiveness, there's like a 9% chance of addiction with medical marijuana versus like over 20% with narcotics. The side effects of medical marijuana are minimal. If you overdose on it, you get paranoid and confused. That goes away. You can actually counter that with CBD, and it takes away the high effect. And we can talk about that. And as far as costs go, what I tell them to do is maybe go online and go on to a Michigan dispensary and see what they're charging. So I mean, right now it's like I can't tell you how much your things are going to cost because the store's not open yet.
Okay. Let me just throw that to our other Randy or Ann.
I'll take that question.
Okay.
The costs vary widely by state. I think California, and you see costs come down the longer it's available. In California and Colorado, where medical and recreational marijuana has been available for a long time, I think I read somewhere in Marijuana Business Daily that the prices had come down from over $100 a gram to less than that now. I don't know how that compares to street level prices, but I think it's a little more expensive than what you could buy on the street. But in terms of your out of pocket costs, I think most consumers are liable to pay the full freight because most insurers won't cover it because it's actually not approved as a prescription drug. And the doctors that recommend marijuana for treatment don't issue a prescription. They don't write you out a prescription. Well, you know this. Well, the doctor who was on before can tell you this. They won't write a prescription. It's a recommendation. And that marijuana may help you help treat one of 21 conditions that qualify for medical marijuana treatment in Ohio.
I think it's safe to say that once the dispensaries open, the prices of the product will probably be significantly higher than in many other states. But once the all of the cultivators come online, all of the processors come online. On the West Coast, what they're finding is the price crashing, and the producers are upset because they're not getting back their investment. So I think we're going to see the market do its magic, and the prices will start high, and as supply and demand level out at some point, the price will meet them there.
Okay, we have a number of callers who have called in, and I want to make sure that we get their questions. Joanne, you have a question about this whole area?
Yeah, thank you. I'm a healthcare provider, and one of the things that concerns me as these producers come online is quality control, and primarily in the name of patient safety. So I'm curious to know from the panel what the producers plan to do in particular. I think they ought to have pharmacists on staff to, you know, be sure that the product they're producing is consistent and safe.
Alex, what would you say about that? I mean, you're involved with different parts of the production, the supply chain.
Yeah, and thanks for the question. And I think it's very valid. Again, the program has been set up with patient safety being the top priority. And I can tell you that our members, and in this circumstance, the cultivators, all have product safety at the very top of their list of priorities as they set up their facilities. I think that, you know, if you are a cultivator, it is certainly not in your best interest to produce a product that is unsafe for whatever reason. These cultivators will have to, you know, reach supply agreements with the processors and the dispensaries that they will send their product to. And there is a limited number of, you know, particularly large scale cultivators. So I think that it's safe to say that were there some kind of product mishap or safety breach of any kind, that would be catastrophic for that individual cultivator's business. And most of these individuals, almost all of them, either operate in other states or have business partners that do. So they are the most professional cultivation operations that you can find anywhere.
And Ann Saker from the Enquirer, one of the things that was raised here by Dr. Thress was the consistency of the dosage that he's recommending to a patient, not writing a prescription, as Randy pointed out to us. Is that possible to really control in this situation?
We're going to find that out. I think this is part of the beauty of this system getting set up, that dosing will be a key feature in how people use this drug. Once we get a consistency of product, doctors will be better able to offer this and say you take 30 milligrams a day or 40 milligrams a day, and the product will come to you in dosable amounts so that you won't be guessing at it. You won't have to smoke three joints and hope that works. You'll know because the doctor will have it written out for you. We are in the early stages of this, and as Alex points out, the cultivators have it in their – it's in their best interest to make sure the product is safe and easy to use because it could easily collapse with one bad batch. So they know how fragile this is.
Randy?
Yeah, I'd just like to add that's why the state has licensed different testing facilities to make sure, just as in other states that have legalized marijuana, that the marijuana meets certain potency consistency standards. So you are dealing with a known product when you're recommending.
And those will be run by the state.
And those, well, they're regulated by the state.
Okay.
I mean, the famous example, of course, is when the New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd went out to Colorado and bought a marijuana candy bar, and it wasn't really labeled properly as to how much she should eat, and she ate the whole thing and spent 12 hours in her hotel room having an unpleasant experience. And so as a consequence of that, the state of Colorado created labeling and dosing requirements on every product. So these things can be adjusted. It's not like we have to do everything right out of the gate. It's going to change as the product as the program stands up.
And Ohio has very extensive labeling requirements for their products too.
Okay, we have
the other
another
thing I would like to say is that one way to quantify things a little bit better is the tincture form. We got a bottle of liquid marijuana, and you know exactly how much is in that tincture. And you know what, 1 milliliter has 5 milligrams, so you can reproduce that on a daily basis. It's a lot more scientific and more medicinal than the vaping or the especially the edibles. You don't know what you're going to get. A lot of people tend to overdose on those.
Okay, we have another caller that I want to get in. Clifford, you have a question about sort of the wider part of working in the industry.
Yes. Hi, thank you for taking my questions. I was just curious what qualification and training is available to enter the industry.
I'll take that question. I wrote a story a couple of weeks ago about some of the job opportunities opening up in the medical marijuana industry, even though none of the businesses are fully operational yet. Well, aside from some of the cultivators. But at the entry level, you really don't need any more qualifications, and you would need to be a retail associate at your local at Walmart or another retail store. They want you to have good people skills, be knowledgeable about the product, and but basically be able just to express as say you were a retail salesperson in a dispensary. Basically just be able to relay the benefits of the product in a way that your customers can understand it. And at the higher end of the spectrum, the industry has created a lot of new opportunities for scientists, flavor technicians, people who used to work for food companies developing different signature tastes for different products. Same thing in the marijuana industry. You know, everyone has their own brand and, you know, own signature flavor and researchers.
And flavor companies are a big thing in this market in the Southwest Ohio, too.
Sure.
Yes,
Kentucky.
Yes, most definitely.
And following on that is on Randy's point there as well, that medicine is also diversifying as a result of this program. You're seeing doctors like Dr. Thress and others who are independent-minded and entrepreneurial, many of whom have been intrigued by the prospect of marijuana for a long time and have wanted to have an opportunity to see what they could do to help their patients.
Dr. Thress, on that point, as I understand your history, you were an OBGYN for a long time. What has it taken you in terms of training, in terms of mindset, to move over into this new area?
Well, I dealt with a lot of addiction in OBGYN. A lot of pregnant women were addicted to a lot of painkillers and things like that. But it's been a really good learning experience, too. I had to take some courses just to get my certification to recommend, but that was just the tip of the iceberg. I read all kinds of articles and books, I find out that the more I know, the less I know. There's a huge amount of knowledge out there. A lot of it's, you know, not the kind that the pharmaceutical companies have, but there's a lot of different parts of the plant that do different things. There's so many different aspects of this medicine, and that's why it's got such a wide amount of things to treat.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just been a huge learning experience, and it's nice to be able to continue to learn.
I'm almost out of time, and I want to rattle off a couple of quick things. What's it going to cost for a person to get the medical marijuana card and therefore be a potential buyer if he has if he has a doctor who recommends something?
Well, as Dr. Thress pointed out, he's, you know, some folks could pay several hundred dollars to—
No, not for the, but just to get the card that says that you're—
Oh, it's a $50 yearly fee.
Okay.
$25 right. If you are disabled or a veteran.
Okay.
A year.
So there are some discounts there.
Yes.
Let me be clear. Yep. You can't just go to your general practice doctor or your internist if you've got a question about this. You need to go to somebody who has worked like Dr. Thress to get into this field. Is that correct?
Well, someone who's been certified by the Ohio Medical Board, and they have that list on their website.
There are 222 physicians as of right now around the state.
And is that growing? Is that continuing to grow, Alec?
That is, and that number is right about where the medical board had hoped the numbers would be, so they are happy with that.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I am sure as we get closer to actually going online with this program, maybe we can get this panel back together when the things are a little bit even farther down the road, a little clearer, and people are ready to act on both sides of the equation here. I want to thank all of my guests today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.